If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
Welcome to the latest Blackhawks Talk podcast. I am Pat Boyle. On this week's episode, Charlie Romeliotis and Nick Gismondi join me. We talk about the Blackhawks as they get ready to hit the road to take on Ottawa, Montreal, and Toronto. How are they handling the injuries to Strome and Saad? And will we see Dylan return on this road trip? Nick Gismondi tells us that he's seen a different approach from Jeremy Colleton in recent weeks. We also look at the captain, who's almost a point-per-game player since November, and which honor will Patrick Kane receive in London later this week? It's all coming up on the latest installment of the Blackhawks Talk podcast.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness, and packaged cold for peak refreshment, because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
All right, so Charlie and Nick, following the 2-2 homestand, the Hawks are now 7 points out of that final wildcard spot in the West. So they lost a little bit of ground on that critical four-game homestand, and now they get set for the three-game Canadian trip, Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto. How would you frame where this team is at right now, Charlie?
Yeah, it's difficult. We're still seeing some ups and downs and not that consistent kind of plan. I think injuries have played a role over the last couple games, especially with Dylan Strome out, because we saw, even though Brandon Saad was out, we saw that balance going throughout the lineup where the first five games or the first six or seven games, there were 13 different skaters that scored for the Blackhawks, and we were seeing that depth scoring. But then when Dylan Strome went down with an injury on Tuesday against Calgary, they had to jumble up some of the lines and the balance was kind of off. So they're still trying to search for who they are as a team, and they're trying to find that balance of not exerting too much energy, not going 100% trying to get to that playoff line, but at the same time having that type of urgency, because we are late in the season now and it has to start becoming a desperate hockey team.
Yeah, I think it's all critical right now, right? I mean, I think I've said this a couple times throughout the year, but there are no must wins, but until you're in the playoffs. But obviously, you're in a critical point here where you need absolutely everything that you can possibly get points wise. I would say that they've got a lot of road success rolling for them right now, and they've got a lot of road trips coming up. So, if there's an opportunity to pick off some points, the time is now. There are some trickier guys in the schedule here. Obviously, Toronto's going to be a tough game on Saturday, but leading into that, I think you've got a couple of points on the board there for sure. Obviously, the goal would be to come away with 6 points on this road trip, come back with five. I think you're real happy.
Yeah, and along the lines of the injuries, I mean, they've been dealing with them throughout the season, but the Saad Strome really hit the top six harder than, you know, what we've seen throughout the year. And young guys have emerged. It's been nice to see Doc get more minutes. Kubalik has certainly stepped up, and hopefully given the guys a blueprint of what you need to do. It's not reinventing the wheel. Getting to the front of the net and looking to score from the paint is something that, you know, we've talked about even through the cup run. There haven't been a ton of those guys on this team. So Kubalik, the 24-year-old rookie, it's nice to see that he's accepted that part of his job description. Some things that still bother me: the power play still isn't consistent. The penalty kill has been great. I mean, I don't think you could, for a unit that was historically bad last year, that was 31st in the league, to be ninth and been in that top 10 area most of the year, 15 to 10, that you can win hockey games that way. So a lot of that I've liked. But, again, it's the consistency factor we've been talking about all year.
Yeah, I want to go back to the injury thing real quick because you make a great point. Like, losing those guys in the lineup, just it affects the whole thing throughout. Like, you lose that consistency a little bit. You also lose some of your horses, and you never know, right? Like, some situations guys will step up, and we've seen that to a certain degree, but maybe not to the full capacity that you're hoping for when you lose a guy like Strome, when you lose a guy like Saad. And, you know, injuries, these guys won't make any excuses, but I do agree with you. I think it's taken a toll throughout the lineup, and it's forced them to do some things differently and maybe escalate guys a little bit quicker. I like the way that Kirby Doc is playing. I think he's been involved in goals, and he hasn't gotten credit for them on the score sheet, but he needs to continue to grow and be a contributor. Kubalik's been brilliant. I think he's been brilliant.
He could win Rookie of the Year. Now, again, I don't think he will, but, you know, we saw Panarin at the same age win Rookie of the Year in 2016.
Yeah, and he's on pace for 29 goals. And last year, Elias Pettersson won the Rookie of the Year, and he scored 28. So he's right there. I know it's been coming in spurts, and it's going to be very difficult for him to leapfrog Quinn Hughes or Cale Makar because both of them just got named to the All-Star game. So it's a tough challenge, but he should absolutely – he's playing his way into that third finalist spot. And I love what you said also about the special teams. Like, before the season started, like, if we said – Which of the two are going to be top 10 and which of the two is going to be in the bottom five? We said that power play is going to be top 10, PK is
absolutely
gonna,
right.
And it's completely opposite. And if you would have told me that at the beginning of the season, I would have said the PK is going to be in the top 10. Like, I think this is a much improved Blackhawks team, and that would be good enough to find themselves into the playoff picture. But the power play hasn't been clicking on a consistent basis at any point, really, all season long. They haven't even had a surge.
And Nick, you've noticed a different approach from Jeremy Colliton here in the last week or so.
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of started a little bit. I'd even go back just a touch farther to just before Christmas. And I think he was, obviously it's his first full year as a head coach. I think he's got an approach, and I think he had to approach things differently here in the NHL than he did when he was coaching in the AHL or when he was coaching overseas. And listen, I've talked to a lot of guys that played with him. I've coached guys that played with him that are still my friends, and they all say the same thing about him. He's a highly intelligent, he's a very motivated guy, he is a good communicator, he's got a big heart, sensitive to what's going on around him in terms of how his guys are responding to him. So I think initially when he came in, he sort of let this team kind of stay in the groove in which they operated before in terms of how they ran a practice and how they operated during practice and what was optional and what was not. And I think because he's not satisfied with where they're at right now, he's taken a much more hands-on approach. And you see him doing that in morning skates. He's more verbal in morning skates. He's communicating more. He's educating more. He's yapping at him to get moving a little bit quicker, a little bit more. And today was another great example of it. He made a optional skill session, if you will, before practice officially started at 11 a.m., and he got pretty much 100% attendance from it. So I think he's starting to get comfortable and coming into his own a little bit too, and we're seeing him be a little bit more hands-on, and I think Jeremy Colliton's taking the reins a little bit more here too.
We asked him after today's practice about Strome and Saad and their availability on the upcoming road trip. A little vague on that one. I guess if we had to kind of guess a little bit, Charlie, would you think Dylan Strome would be the first player that would likely draw back in from the injured list?
Yeah, I think so, just because he was originally put on a day-to-day timetable and it wasn't as severe as Brandon Saad's, who it was 3 weeks from December 26th, I believe, when they sent out that press release. And it looks like he's going to be beyond that three-week timetable. And I think Jeremy Colliton also said on Saturday that he might not return until after the NHL All-Star break, and maybe they want to give Saad that extra 10 days to make sure he's fully healthy, because with sprains it can be difficult to predict. But I did think it was interesting that Jeremy kind of hinted at the fact that both of them might not make this trip on the Canada trip, and it's interesting because they reassigned John Quenneville to Rockford. So they're only sending 12 healthy forwards if Strome and Saad aren't going to make the trip. So this was before Jeremy spoke to team doctors, because he spoke to the media first after practice. It's usually the other way around, where we go to the locker room first, he gets a word with team doctors, and then he comes and reports to us. So I'm not going to rule out the fact that maybe both or one of them could join the team, just because I think, you know, what are they going to do here in Chicago? They're just going to skate on their own. And like at some point, Strome might be closer to return and actually maybe get into a practice with the team, kind of like what we saw when Corey Crawford was coming back from his concussions. Like he joined the team, you know, because he needed to see pucks and he needed to get into action. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that with Strome also.
Yeah, I think, you know, reading the tea leaves with Quenneville going down and not making the corresponding move, that would make me think that the logical guess that Strome might be available, especially with the bugs that have been going around with this team. You know, like some guy could come down day of, and then all of a sudden you're in that, well, I got to go with 7D situation. So, and you think things have been disturbed, not having Saad and Strome in the top six, and having guys playing, you know, I want to say above their pay grade, but okay, above their line grade, so to speak. If you think Carpenter and you know, Sakura or Nylander is an odd fit at times with Patrick Kane, imagine taking yet one more forward out of the mix. You can only ask Patrick to double shift so many times. And then you've got back-to-backs, too. So, like, you know, it's okay double shifting 88 when you play every other day. We've seen that doesn't affect his stamina. He's able to go at it full tilt. But when you've got a Tuesday-Wednesday scenario, Ottawa-Montreal, that would be a tall task to ask.
Yeah, I mean, you're I don't want to jinx anything here or nothing like that, but you're dangerously close if you lose another guy right now, especially a guy of significant substance to the lineup. You'd be in a lot of trouble. I mean, I think everybody got a scare when Robin Leonard went down. I mean, imagine if somebody else, I'm not even going to say any names because I'm superstitious, but if you lose somebody like that, you definitely put yourself in a difficult spot. So, yeah. And you know what's funny, Pat? You bring it up too. Like, everybody's been sick.
Yeah.
I mean, you got sick. Yeah. I barely fought it off. I mean, coach was sick. The guys in the room are coughing. Yeah. No making out, Charlie. yeah, it's, you're in a weird spot right here in this time of year, and obviously it's critical because that room still believes they can make a push for it here, and they're going to do everything they can to make a push for it. But you lose a couple of guys here, you're in trouble.
You mentioned Robin Leonard. It was great to see him back in the crease. I thought he made, some absolute spectacular saves in that third period, you know, to preserve the Hawks' lead against Anaheim. You guys both were there, and it wasn't a huge group. It was an optional practice on Friday. And the topic of Robin's contract extension came up. And like he always is, he's very candid, very open, very honest. Basically, in a nutshell, I've given discounts in the past. I'm not into giving a discount at this stage of the game. I don't want to be overpaid, and I understand how that affects the cap and doesn't give you flexibility to help the team in other areas. But one of the questions that was posed to him, and it came from John Dietz, and you know, he was, I think, if I heard it correctly, was trying to say, you know, that the Hawks bet on you, referring to some of the things that have gone on with Robin in the past. And Robin quickly halted that question, like, whoa, this was my call. They didn't bet on me. In other words, let's not go down the my mental health issues have anything to do with the one-year deal and things of that nature. So it got a little testy, I guess you might say. You guys were both there. Give me your takes on what you heard, what you saw, and what you think it meant.
Yeah, so to be fair, and we want to put this all into context, you know, some of the quotes that were coming out later that day was only, they were only, you know, providing the answers to, but not the questions of what Robin was asked. So that's why we ended up posting the full interview on NBCSportsChicago.com. And I think it really did put everything into perspective where Robin made it very clear. He likes it in Chicago. He really believes in this group or else he wouldn't have signed here. And he just wants to be paid market value. And he, like you said, he doesn't want to be underpaid, but he also doesn't want to be overpaid. Like, he just wants market value, and he wants to be rewarded both in dollars and in term, because he feels like this is his third consecutive year of being a UFA, and he's signed one-year deals for the past 3 years, and he wants security. And I'm sure that's, it's been difficult on his family too, where you're picking up and moving different locations every other year, and I'm sure that's difficult psychologically to maybe, like, you know, everyone wants that kind of security. So I think Robin handled it in the best way possible. And Gizmo, I'm going to throw it to you, over to you on what you what your thoughts on that were, because we were there, and I think we kind of both sensed what was happening, and Robin handled it really well.
Yeah, I'd say, listen, I think first and foremost, everybody wants to kind of subtly or not so subtly bring up Robin's mental health. And I feel like I can firmly say that based on where he's been over the last year and where he is at this year on what he calls his new journey, he is successfully navigating that very, very well with no missteps at all. So that shouldn't even be a question and or a factor in what he is owed or what he has deserved moving forward. So, you know, I think the thing with Robin right now is that in spite of battling that on his own side, he's also trying to erase that stigma for maybe other people who aren't as vocal about it or aren't as in the forefront as Robin is about it. So I think it's very important that, you know, Robin's able to speak his mind in regards to that and say, hey, listen, get that out of the picture. That has nothing to do with this right now. It may have in the past, but that stigma needs to change, and I applaud him for going after that. On the ice, Robin Leonard is brilliant. You referenced those saves he made in that last game. Absolutely spectacular stuff from him. I mean, he's got a career 918 save percentage. He's 922 this season. Low goals against. You know,
lots of shots, lots of high danger chances.
Yeah, and lots of work.
Lots of work.
So. Yeah. You know, if you look at the overall picture, and then plus you take the leader that he's been in the locker room, this is a win. This is an absolute win. I see zero reason why you don't sign Robin Leonard to multi years. And listen, I can assimilate with him on the moving around. It's not fun. Like, you want to be in a place that you like and love, and that you feel comfortable about, and that you enjoy being in, and who wants you there? And he's got that in Chicago. I completely relate to him on that. Like, I've been here for 5 months too, and I love this place. I love you guys. I love the team. I love the organization. Like, I get it. When you find something you love, you want to stay. And I think he wants to stay, and I think his family wants to stay too. And I think all of those things help him out on that journey as well too, right? If you're happy mentally, you're going to play good hockey. And I think that's what we're seeing from Robin Leonard.
You know, a lot of the questions we had coming into this season were, how were guys that had career years last year going to follow them up this year? Well, Patrick Kane, he's on pace for another 100-point campaign. Again, it may not be 110 like last year, but, you know, Jonathan Toews had a career year last year. Slow start. Again, not consistent line mates all the time. Kubalik's been a nice fit with him. But, Charlie, you wrote a piece this week that, you know, chronicles since early November, the captain is almost a point per game player.
Yeah, and I spoke to him last week. It was right before the Calgary game, and I had a conversation with him, and I brought it up to him that your offense is coming more naturally and more consistently for a while now. And he said, has it? Like, I guess if you're telling me that, then it's a good thing. And I asked him if he disagreed, and he kind of said that he wasn't really satisfied with his production this season. But if you go back, he started his first 11 games, he only had 2 points. It was one goal and one assist. And ever since the calendar flipped to November, he has 33 points over 35 games. That's nearly a point per game pace, which he produced at last season. Now, to be fair, maybe he feels like he isn't creating as much, and maybe, you know, obviously the goals haven't been there. Like, I think he's on pace for about a little over 20 goals, and last year I think he got 35. So that's not coming at a rate, but he still is producing. He's creating chances. And oh, by the way, his best stretch of hockey have come over these last four games, or over these last four or five games, and he hasn't had Brandon Saad on his line. Like, he's right. doing it with Dominic Kubalik and most recently John Quenneville, who just got reassigned to Rockford. So he is driving possession. I think he was selling himself a little bit short here, but he looks like the Jonathan Toews that we're used to seeing and the guy that produced at the same rate last season.
And like those 2 5-on-3s last week that the Hawks killed off, he was relentless.
Yes.
In those games, in that game, I, you know, so there's things that are going on that, you know, aren't directly showing up in the stat sheet. His face-offs off the charts as always. I thought it was a great sign against Anaheim. You know, he's got a cookie on the doorstep, and he goes off the post, and it's one of those things is. Hockey, you say to yourself, it's going to be one of those nights, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm right in front of the net. I basically have the whole 4x6 to throw it into. I throw it off the post. TV timeout, comes back, 2-on-1, and he snaps one home, 5-hole. And, you know, that bad luck 1 minute prior didn't impact the rest of his game. So when you see players like Patrick making the most out of, you know, not like the most ideal situation, that's where you got to say that's a good player.
Yeah.
So I've been impressed with that from Johnny this year, because you get off to a slow start, the wins aren't and the points aren't piling up in the standings. You're playing with different guys. They're getting just acclimated to life in the NHL. You've got 3 cups, 2 gold, blah, blah, blah. And he's still, you know what, turning the page, like, all right, going to make the best of this. And you can see the frustration in our sound bites on post game. This guy wears it on his sleeve. But I've been impressed with what he's done with what he's been given.
Right. He's a very harsh self-critic. And usually those great players are. Like, Patrick Kane is his own biggest critic. Jonathan Toews is his own biggest critic. Jonathan Toews seems to wear it on his sleeve, though. And you can see, it's funny because you talk to him about his offense and, you know, creating chances, but he is always a guy, towards the end of the interview, he's always a guy that he likes being on the positive side of those plus minus stats. So, like, he's a guy that still looks at that and wants to make sure that he's creating more than he's giving up. And over these last 5 games, he is a +2 rating, but he was a -2 against that Nashville game, and both of those came at even strength. But those are the empty net goals. So he should be a +4 over those last 5 games. And overall, he's a -6. But lately, he's playing so much better.
That's why the plus-minus stat is a little bit of a bogus stat in a lot of ways.
Yeah, because it doesn't recognize that it was a 6-on-5. Like, yeah, it's still even strength to them. So, but Jonathan Toews is really, you know, he wants to make sure that he's out there. And Jeremy Colleton talks about it, too. It's what you give versus what you give up, right? So Jonathan Toews always likes being on the positive side of that.
Nah, it's extreme ownership for me with him. Like, this is a leader. Like, I keep referencing this, but I'm the new guy, so I watch these guys from afar, right? You don't get much of a chance to talk to them or see him on a day-to-day working, practicing, talking, communicating. He's a perfectionist. He's on the ice at the end of practice taking 20 tips if he thinks that's what he needs to work on. Or, you know, jab steps or you know, just even just one times or whatever it is that Jonathan Toews feel like he's not contributing wholeheartedly to, he's out there working on it after practice. And then he's a leader by example, and he's a complete own it guy. So that's the kind of guy that I want to follow, because you watch a guy like that who he could have a great game, but he's still going to walk. You're walking in the locker room to talk to him, and he's wearing it. He's owning it. And I think you said it the best. I think we're seeing a different style for him. I think he's trying to maybe pick this thing up and put it on his back a little bit. And I like that. I think that Jonathan Toews is an essential part of this organization right now. And I think that he's got a lot of those guys following him. And the other thing, Pat, I'll say is that I think he had to step up his leadership role too. I think that I think that Seabrook was a big voice in that room and certainly an iconic guy that a lot of guys looked to, including Jonathan Toews. And without Seabrook in the locker room on a day-to-day basis, I feel like Jonathan probably thought to himself, okay, yeah, I've worn the C, but it was a collective leadership. Now I think Jonathan looks at it and he's like, I've got to make up that ground and make up that voice and that leadership that maybe Seabrook has left.
Agree with that wholeheartedly. And the other thing, and I mentioned this more last year, but you know, when a new coach comes in with a new system, and you guys have been here at that point, it was 12 seasons, and you've got to adapt to the new system. I was always impressed how those guys, at least publicly, never spoke disparagingly about the transition, about the new system, about how it was affecting them, blah, blah, blah. So, and you know, obviously that's carried over into this year as well. And it's been tough sledding. And this team, you know, I was talking about with Jeff Corbett, our esteemed photographer, before we started this podcast. And he said, he goes, hey, how many three-game win streaks do they have this year? And I go, well, they know they have one for sure. I look back, they've got one four-game winning streak in November, one three-game win streak in December. I mean, that, you know what I mean? Like, it's two steps forward, one step back.
And I think they have five three-game losing streaks this year. Yeah, four or five three games.
Like, so, and wouldn't you say, like, a three-game win streak is just showing that this a team can be somewhat consistent? That's not even, like, you know, stepping far out there. The fact that, you know, we are at this stage of the season, you know, some 47 games in or whatever it is, and they only have the one four-game win streak and the one three, kind of speaks to the rough road and the bumps that this team has absorbed.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that it feels like after they go on those three or four-game winning streaks, like the next loss is like a bad loss. Like, it doesn't feel like a good loss where it's like, man, like they really could have built some momentum. It wasn't even like a loss where, you know, it was an overtime loss, or it was a loss that they played really well and they can, you know, A, we lost the game, but, you know, if we play that way going forward, that's going to be a good recipe for success. So, yeah, you're very right. It's very important for them to actually take advantage of these next five games. And I know we keep saying it all year long, but they're so far down from the playoff picture now that, like, we got to have this conversation every time. Every time we do a podcast, because things change so quickly in the Western Conference.
Well, the good news is their game suits the road style. We've harped on that on this and on the broadcasts. You spoke with Zach Smith. He's going to go back to one of his old buildings in Ottawa on Tuesday night. The guys always get Jack to go to Montreal, the Molson Center. I'm sure we'll see Corey Crawford on Wednesday, and then it's hockey night in Canada on Saturday night in the big TO. So it, you know, the energy will be built in just with two of those three venues. But what did you take away from your conversation with Zach Smith?
Yeah, like the thing I like about Zach Smith is that he's having to play a little bit of a different role here, right? He's on a fourth line situation, but he's had a couple of different guys with him throughout the year. So there's an adjustment process there too. But I think what Zach has liked and what Zach has done well is his adaptability. He's managed to play with Highmoor or with Kajula or whomever else might be in that situation. And he's been brilliant on the penalty kill too. So, but spent a lot of time in Ottawa. I think he's looking forward to getting back there. Not much time there to see his old pals and staff and things like that. But guys will get up for that. Guys will get up for him for that and rally around him a little bit. And I think you've got a couple of pretty exceptional venues there, right? You're going to get up for hockey night in Canada. Everybody gets up for that because you watch it as a kid. So that'll be a high intense game, especially in Toronto, in and around where a lot of those guys are from. And then, you know, Montreal, you got to go just for the hot dogs. So, I mean, that in and of itself, you know, those will be in the room post game if they get a win. So,
and a special moment for Patrick Kane on Friday night in London. The fact that the London Knights will honor him and retire his 88 jersey, you know, to me, and I was sad that we weren't able to have a conversation with Patrick before they embarked on this trip. Like, this is the first time I can remember in now his 13th season where, like, it's one of those events that, like, talk about your career and kind of, you know, they kind of mark that you're on the back end of
getting
your
older,
career. Yeah, getting older. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, forever in this town, and I've seen the the guy play pretty much every shift, that you never think he's going to get old. Well, you know, obviously that's changed. We've had several players on this Blackhawks team that had his poster on their wall, you know, as kids, and now they're, you know, teammates of his, and that's gone on and on. But this time to see him be recognized in the sense of being honored for his time in London, you know, right before he was made the number one overall pick, it's kind of like, wow, okay, yeah, you know, you are getting older.
Yeah, I'm also kind of confused. What took them so long to retire his jersey?
Like, that's
after
a good point.
After the third cup, I would have been like, you know what, we should probably put this guy's
name in. It's a long storied history in London. Long.
But also, like, Patrick Kane, like, he's approaching 1,000 points, too. And that's just, like, it's crazy to me that, you know, I'm sure he's going to say it, too, after he hits it. Like, just a lot of the good players, that it's like, oh, you've played in your 1,000th game. What does that mean? It was like, well, it means I'm getting old. You know, it's like, it's very strange to see him, because Patrick Kane still looks like he's playing at such a high level. And he still looks like he's a kid out there, one of the first ones on the ice for practice and things like that. But it's going to be very cool to see his jersey get retired in London.
The first time it'll be retired elsewhere as well, when he decides to call it a career in the next, I don't know what, 15 years.
There will be a statue too.
Oh, there'll be a statue. But listen, you know, for me, it's fun with Patrick Kane. I've watched him play since he was 13, 14 years old when he was playing for Honeybaked in Detroit. You know, so watching him as that young kid, and you watch him step onto the ice, and you know how it is, Pat, when it's the AAA ranks, you can kind of pick out the guys that are a little bit above and beyond everybody else. And Patrick Kane was far above and beyond everybody else, even at like 13, 14, 15 years old. So to watch him do what he did, and then I was able to cover him in the Ontario Hockey League as well when he was with London and I was with the Plymouth Whalers. But he's done some amazing things, and he's not done yet. And I think the coolest thing about him is, and somebody made this reference, might have been you actually, but the fine wine. I mean, this kid keeps getting better. I think he's honestly getting better. Like, watching him all of these years, and like I said, I've watched him now for a long, long, long time. I think he's getting better. He's still working on his game. He hasn't missed a step. His pace, his speed, his mental game, it's all brilliant. I mean, this is a generational player.
That's the part of his game, like the mental part. And I mean, he's such a cerebral player.
Yeah.
And he's taken that to a whole nother level here in the last handful of years, trying to get the edge on the competition in any way possible. That's what's going to be so cool about Saturday night. You know, he and Austin Matthews have developed a bit of a friendship. And we've also seen, you know, the Selly war that they had on the west side a year ago. At the beginning of the season, and that to me, if you want to grow this sport, I always said that like that was, if I was trying to turn the NHL on to somebody who was on the fence, I would put Toronto at Chicago early last season, the Selly off between Kane and Matthews, and it was everything you would want in hockey. It had a little wrestling, it had showmanship, it had it all. And I think when those two hit the ice on Saturday night, I have a feeling we're going to see yet the latest chapter between those two.
Yeah, they have a lot of respect for each other, and they've gone to that Daryl Belfry camp together. And we even saw it earlier in the year where Austin Matthews had a spinorama, a primary assist spinorama, where it really resembled the spinorama that Patrick Kane does. And it's like, oh, well, where did Austin Matthews pick that skill up? So It should be a fun game. And it reminds me of, man, talking about these last 4 years, 5 years, with 4 years with Patrick Kane, where he keeps taking his game to a different level. I really miss watching him in the playoffs. Like, it's so special seeing him doing it at the highest level. And even, you know, Edmonton hasn't made the playoffs. Like, Connor McDavid, like, those guys, hockey fans deserve to see those guys at the highest level. So
how about Alex DeBrincat has yet to play a playoff game?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, we've marveled at what he's done on the ice in a few short years, and thrilled that he got this contract. And, you know, he should be on that stage. You know, like, I'd like to see what DeBrincat would do on a playoff stage.
Right, and poor Connor Murphy. I think he's one of the league leaders in most games played without a playoff game experience. So Yeah, it's a whole combination of things, but Patrick Kane, like, it would have been cool this it would have been cool to see or potentially would be cool to see Patrick Kane playing in the playoffs at this high of a level in his career.
All right, any parting shots, anything you guys want to get off your chest?
Wow, that sounds personally, no, I think I'm good. Professionally, I feel like I'm all right.
This isn't couch time.
Yeah, I was going to say, geez,
I was going to ask for a copay.
There's this one thing. always fun being on with you guys. Thanks, BB.
All right, great stuff as always. The upcoming three-game road trip begins Tuesday night. Of course, we'll have all the games for you. NBC Sports Chicago. That'll do it for the latest installment of the Blackhawks Talk podcast. My thanks to Charlie and Nick. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll catch you next time.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.